This is 90.3.
This is Dear FM.
Hi, and welcome to the International Writers Network. And today, like we always do, we have a wonderful guest for you. Our guest writer today is Dermot Fitzgerald. He is a renowned writer. He has done so much that I just want to give you a little bit, and he's going to tell us more himself. He lives and works in Dublin. He's a teacher, a writer, a healer, and a coach. He has bought his own collection of poems, which the latest one is The Singing Hollow, which was published in 2021, but was actually launched online because it was a COVID situation.
He published two collections of haiku, this is special poems.
He's also been a recipient of two grants. He won the South Dublin County Council Individual Artist Bursary in 2018 and also a Word Island Mentoring Bursary in 2021. We're going to find a bit more about how those things work, but I just want to say welcome to the platform. We're delighted to have you, Dermot. And like we say to all the writers, you're the celebrity here. We want to know all about your writing journey. Tell us how it all began, that you fell in love with poetry and writing.
All right, well, first of all, thanks for inviting me on the show. It's great to be here. It's always great to be promoting poetry there. So yeah, I started writing when I was 17. So I was in secondary school, and I really had to thank a secondary school teacher. His name is Dermot Coakley. I think he later became the principal of the school I left. And up till then, I didn't really understand poetry. I didn't really get it. It was kind of a thing was there, but I just didn't pay too much attention to. And then he really opened it up for me. And it was the first time I actually understood poetry. Because what makes poetry a bit different to other forms of writing is it's a very compressed form of writing. It's almost like a language. It's almost like a special language. And then people who read it or hear it can get very confused. They can kind of go, you know, oh, I don't get it, you know, what do you mean? And, you know, and some poetry is very obscure and some of it's not. But it's kind of, it's nearly like a separate language. It's almost like the language of magicians, you know, in a way. It's kind of almost like a code. And once I understood that poetry is almost kind of like a code, then once you crack the code, you're kind of in. And it can make you feel kind of like, ooh, this has got its own frequency. So that's kind of got me hooked on poetry. And I started writing loads of poems, and I was writing teenage-y type stuff, you know, teenage angst poetry of I hate the world and I hate everybody. You know, the usual stuff, you know. Think of your bratty teenager. Now, I wasn't a bratty teenager, but, you know, I had all that teenager angsty stuff. And I just used to write the poems in one draft, and that was it. And it was just me. It was like a form of therapy, really. It was just gushing out all my inner states. And then I would just leave it at that. And then it wasn't until I got to university, then somebody was kind of saying, you know, you should work on this and improve it. And it never occurred to me that, you know, when you write a poem first, it's just a first draft. That doesn't mean it's finished. You actually have to try and work on it to make it better. It never occurred to me that, you know, you had to improve it. I thought when poets wrote a poem, it came out the published poem was the first draft. That's very rare. Most poets have to work on it hard. So it's like anything, it's like dancing and music. You know, you don't just pick up the guitar and suddenly, you know, you're on the rock, you know, or you're in the band or you're on stage. You know, you practice. So that's what I did then when I was in college. I learned to redraft my poems a lot. And then when I finished college, at that stage I kind of stopped poetry because I did a master's, and that took up all my creative imagination. And I thought that was it. Okay, I'm done with poetry, no more. And then for a year I wrote nothing post-master. And then it just all came bursting out again. And I started to write more. And this time I just read poetry for pleasure. And because when I was in school, secondary school, you know, you had to read the prescribed texts, you know, like Heaney and Kavanagh and Yeats and, you know, the usual crowd that you get. There's nothing wrong with those poets, by the way. It's just what you're kind of presented with. These are the poets. So that was all I was familiar with. So then I started reading contemporary poets, and I started to realize, oh, you can write about different topics and different things in different ways. So that's why I started to realize that there's kind of like political poetry, and then there's sort of free verse, and then there's all styles. It's like from very traditional to very radical, you know, out there stuff. And then I noticed my poetry was getting shorter and shorter and shorter. And it was getting so short to the point I was kind of going, okay, why don't I try and write haiku? Because like my poetry was only like 4 lines long or 3 lines long. I was like, I might as well give it a go. So I wrote what I consider to be my version of haiku. So I wrote what most people would think of haiku, which is a 3-line poem with 17 syllables, 5 syllables in the first line, 7 in the second, and 5 in the third. So I did that for a while. And then I got a book of haiku, modern haiku anthology. And very quickly I realized that most writers in modern English don't stick to that form. It's a lot more playful. So I abandoned that 5-7-5 form. And then eventually I moved to Japan, and I lived there for years. And whilst I was in Japan, I joined a haiku writing group, which I'm still actually a member of, but I'm not really active in anymore. It's called Hailstone Haiku Circle. And that's when I really got into the traditions behind haiku, because haiku arose from Japanese monks practicing their Zen Buddhism. So it's a very spiritual tradition, and it's a very much tradition about accepting life as it is, not trying to make it anything other than it is, you know, putting out the welcome mat. So if something bad happens, you just kind of welcome that and just kind of going, that's here now, that's in my life. You know, how do I deal with this? So one of the ways of dealing with bad stuff is acceptance. So that's very much chimes into Zen approach to life. And I saw there was a huge spiritual tradition behind haiku. So my haiku style shifted, because up to then it was kind of very superficial. But then it became a lot more, well, how do I capture this, you know, sense of spirituality in a very brief form? And you know, nature can provide that sometimes. And so can human interactions. So that's what kind of got me into it. Then I went to London. I left Japan eventually. And I went to London. I did teacher training there. And again, I liked the time when I went to college. There, I had no time for creativity because there was so much work to do. So all my creative juices stopped. And again, like that, it took a while for it to come back, because once you go through a very intense period, it might just take up all your time and energy, and you're just dealing with that. So I eventually came back to Ireland. And then the kind of the poetry dam burst, and you know, all this creativity which had been bottled up for ages just started to flood out, and I started to write. And more or less around the same time, I also made a very important decision which stood to me, was I decided to stop treating my writing as a hobby and start treating it with the proper respect it deserves, because up until then I had no publication experience whatsoever, nothing. So I was 33 years of age, and I hadn't a single thing published to my name, and I was like, okay, I need to take this seriously and really give it all I can get, and if it doesn't work out, then just abandon it and do something else, or, you know, just give it up entirely. So it's like, it was kind of that do or die territory. You know, sometimes people get that, you know, in terms of a relationship or a job or a career or something like that. You know, it's either I can't keep going with the way things are, I have to go down either one way or the other. So that's the way I approach my writing. So I started to really invest time into journals, into reading contemporary collections by poets, going to events, finding out how do you actually go about the business of getting stuff published. And I've joined writer groups and all that. And between one thing and another, that's what led the way. So for example, when I was living briefly in West Cork, and I came back up to Dublin, and I got a job here as a school teacher, and I joined this group called the Haiku Ireland. It no longer meets up, it's gone now. But they used to meet about once every 2 months in the Chester Beatty Library in Dublin, which is a great place, and it's a lovely building, and there's a lovely cafe there. And then just kind of was like networking and meeting friends through writing, and then I'd bring along the haiku, and then we would read it out and discuss it and swap and share books and ideas and stories. And then I met a lady called Maeve O'Sullivan, and she was then a well-regarded haiku writer. And I asked her, would she be willing to mentor me? Because I had done courses over the years, like one-off courses, you know, courses where you kind of meet up for a couple of weeks and all that. And that all helped, but this, I kind of wanted more one-on-one help. And so I started to share my work with her, and she liked it, and she gave me loads of guidance. and that helped. I need to backtrack a little bit, because one of the things I did do was, before I joined this group, was I walked in London, or in England, I walked the River Thames, and I started off in London City, and I walked all the way to the source. And when I did that, I wrote haiku or tanka on the way. And tanka are like long haiku, they're 5 lines long, so they're a little bit more roomy. It's another traditional Japanese format, not so well known, but they're related to haiku. It's a very similar approach. And so I wrote kind of a mixture of both. And the idea was just write a couple and see what happens, you know. And the entire journey took me about 2 weeks in to do it. And I wrote over 200 poems in those 2 weeks. So it just flooding out of me. And I never realized that I could do this. Like, it was, I went with just very open intention of just see what happens. And just, it was kind of one of the things that, like, when you step out of your usual routine, stuff can kind of come to you. So that served the basis of my first collection, Thames Way, and that's where Mabel Sullivan came in, and she helped me mentor that and sort of improve the quality, because I didn't really know, even back then, what exactly was required. I had a bit from my time in Japan, so she really showed me the ropes, and I scrubbed it and worked and worked and worked on it. And I started to send them out to different journals, haiku journals. I became members or signed up to groups, and about 10 to 15 of them were picked up by various journals. And then I met Maeve's publisher. His name is Kim Richardson. He's a British man living in London. He's actually going to be in Ireland very shortly again. And I approached him through Maeve. I said, look, I have this collection. Some of the poems have been published, and all this. He had a look. I remember I gave it to him in the bar. He read through a couple of pages. He said, yeah, that'll do. And I went, well, what? Like, just like that, you know, over a pint. He was like, yep. And I nearly fell off my chair, because I had been to expecting, you know, rejection after rejection, and then all these hoops jumped through. And he was like, no, it's grand. And I was just like, all right then. And it was just like, so that eventually became my first book out. So I did the launch and all the rest of it, and that went really well. And that was like, yay, it's nice to get my name on a book cover, and, you know, all that razzmatazz and everything else. And that was a huge accolade. So it's like, I'm a published author. So I was telling all my friends, you know, I'm going to go around and call myself a published author, and every introduction is like, hello, I'm a published author. You know, and you feel like saying that to nearly everybody. You go into a shop going, how much is milk? By the way, I'm a published author.
You're so funny.
Yeah, so you kind of have that kind of ego thing, but at the same time, you have to realize most people don't care. If I always think, if you think you're famous, stand around O'Connell Street and wait for people to come to approach you. Okay, here's it. As a poet, nobody will. So, if you're a rock star, if you're Garth Brooks, yeah, you might get mobbed, but you know, forget about it. But I felt like a rock star at the day of the launch. You know, it was just like, wow, it was amazing. And so that was great. And then there's the post launch crash, which is like life comes back to reality. It's like, okay, what do I do next? So I had, by this stage, built up a huge back catalogue of haiku. So I sat down and I had over 400 of them, not just from the time in the UK, but from Japan and everywhere else. And I kind of went through them and sifted and sorted them out. And I kind of had about 200 that I thought were decent enough. And I brought them to Kim again. And I said, look, here I have this. And he said, he had a look and he said, no. And I went, what do you mean by no? I said, you accepted the first book, you must accept the second book. And he says, the first book was a themed collection. That's why he published it. But the second book was unthemed. And he says, for it to be a collection, each poem or each haiku will have to be published. Then I'll publish it by journals. And I went, holy God, that's going to take like decades, 7 years. Like, because when you send stuff out, there's no guarantee that any journal will accept it. You know, you could be sending them out and they might say, no, not into any of those. So I thought, this is going to take forever. So I kind of accepted the challenge and went, do you know what? I'm going to try it. So I sat down and I looked at the 200 haiku, and I created a system, very systematic, but sit down and churn them out. And the haiku world is a bit different to the ordinary poetry world, is that they, depending on which journal it is, they may take up to 10 haiku in terms of, they might consider it, and they might accept, say, 4 or 5 at most, sometimes 1, just depends. So I created a system, and every week I would churn them out to different journals, and it was just very systematic. And so in the space of about a year and a half, I got all 200 or 150 published over the space of that time. So it was just real go at it. At the same time then, I also realized I kind of wanted to up my game a little bit. I liaised with two well-known haiku writers within the haiku world. One's called a guy called Sean O'Connor. He's the editor of the Haibun magazine. That's another related haiku form. And then a lady called Roberta Beery, who is an American haiku poet, but she lives here in Ireland, or partly lives here in Ireland. And I gave my collection to them, and I said, look, you know, tell me what you think. Don't hold back. You know, be as critical as you can. By God, were they critical? He shredded my piece, the entire manuscript. And I said, don't hold back. I just mean, rip it totally. leave me with something. It's like going into one of these, you know, shows, you know, Operation Transformation, and they, you know, they make you do a marathon on your first day. You're like, give me a break. So I did that. I took on board some of the feedback. I thought, okay, like, wow, like, they're, when I said them not to be unsparing, they certainly weren't. So I took that on board. I accepted some of their advice. I rejected others. At the end of the day, I think that a writer always has the right to do that. You know, if you listen to what people have to say, it's up to you. You can listen to what they have to say. You can say yes or no, or better still, you can screen what they're saying. So I did that. And so by that stage, I had reduced the 200 poems down to about 100. And I went back to Kim and I said, they've all been published. And so he accepted the manuscript. And by this stage, I was into the whole grant writing thing. And that was an experience. So I got a grant from South Dublin County Council, which paid for the publication of my second haiku collection. The way ALBA publishing works, it's kind of like, a little bit like self-publishing, that with ALBA, it's a risk for him to publish your work, so you have to pay up front for printing and publication costs. It's not very high, it's about 700 euro. But then what you do is, as you sell the books, you recoup the cost, you keep the money, and then if you go into profit territory, you split it. For most poetry collections, say by regular publishing houses, it's a loss-making enterprise. You never get any money. So if you got picked up by a more regular publishing house, you'd get zero pay. But with ALBA, if you can sell their books well, you can actually make money. And I made money out of Thames Way, and I've made money out of this third collection, The Singing Hollow, there. So that's unusual for poetry, is to make even any money, is almost unheard of. With Thousand Sparks, I wasn't under the same pressure because I got a grant that covered most of the expenses, so I haven't pushed it as much. So that was that. That was great. I was like, yay, I got this haiku, second haiku collection out. And I got picked up by journals. I sent them out. They got reviewed. And I always find the review process is interesting because I sent the same collection out to three different places, and they came back with three completely different reviews. And one journal in America, it's called Frog Pond. It's the top haiku journal in the entire world. They gave it a very positive review, and they gave it nearly a 2-page review, which is really great, and they were glowing in their praise. I sent it to a journal in the UK called Blythe Spirit. They did not give it a good review. It's quite a negative one. And then there was another journal in America where they do these very brief reviews. They're only like a paragraph, 2 paragraphs long, and it was kind of more of a mixed review. It was kind of like his main take was interesting, was the way he described my collection. So it's funny the way how you can work on something and you can really put a lot of quality control in it. You put a lot of effort in it, and you send it out to the world, and people can take quite a negative or positive attitude towards it. So I always believe reviews are just somebody's opinion in print, and that's all.
Well, that's a good way to look at it. And now it's been so, I could listen to, I mean, you've taught us so many just listening to your journey. It's just been amazing. But I think the aha moment for me was when you said that I'm going to have to do something about this. You're going to have to be serious about it and not just let it just keep on flowing like that. I think that is a big moment for me, to for others, I'm sure the listeners as well, and writers.
And see, I've seen this, because when I made that decision, I've stuck to it since. It's a decision you don't just make once, you have to make it all the time, and you just have to carve out time. So your writing should be like a second job, you know, you just carve out the time. So think about it, anybody who out there has a second job, you just find the time somehow by some means. And that's interesting, because I've since joined like a number of writers groups, And it strikes me as talent alone isn't enough, because I joined one writers group which has since kind of gone defunct, and they, a lot of members of this group, I would have said at the start, were far more talented than I was. But I stuck at it longer and harder, and I just kept pushing and pushing and pushing myself and sort of accepting every challenge on the way. And now I'm 3 books out. Some people in other groups, they might have gotten a poem or two published here and there, and that's it. And I just spent the time dedicated it. Now, that's my own choice. Not everybody necessarily has the time. So they might, you know, have children, or they're in a caring position, or, you know, life doesn't allow them to sit down and do their work. But you just have to carve out the time by some means. And if you can do that, you can get there, I think. You know, you can overcome obstacles. Just like that, when at the second collection, my editor said no. Like, I was completely shocked at the time when he said no. And I was just totally, like, flummoxed and thought, how am I going to do this? This is going to take decades. Decades in the space of a year and a half. So I've since joined another writers group, which is actually called the Hibernians Writing Group, and they're a great group. And the level of quality that what they produce in that group is great. And I was invited in again through my friend Maeve O'Sullivan. She's really helped me a lot, because when I joined that group, they really gave me very substantial feedback on my work, and I was able to level up my poetry. So I kind of moved away from the haiku, and then I wrote regular poetry. I always wrote regular poetry, but I kind of put more of an emphasis on the haiku for a long while, and then I went back to the regular poetry, and I've been writing that probably for the last few years now, since then. And again, like that, I've just been sending them out to loads of journals, and some of them have gotten published, and then I put together a collection last year. It was kind of like a lockdown baby. I found out a lot of free time on my hands, because essentially once I got my work done online, because I had to teach online, I had a lot of free time. I wasn't meeting up with people, and I put together the collection. It was all in different poems and different bits, and there was no particular order to it. And I just sat down and sort of worked in it, and got it together. And I went back to Kim, and he published it there. And like that, I had planned initially to do a face-to-face launch. I had that all organized and was ready to go. And then just, it was in the winter of 2021, the figure started to rise again. And it was just like, oh Lord. So I had to pull the face-to-face launch and did it online, and actually it turned out to be quite a good thing. So online launches aren't bad, because I got loads of people from other countries tuning in. I think it's a good idea that, you know, to do, I think the hybrid approach is probably the best for launches, if you can do it so that people who can't physically go there, you know, they can take part from the comfort of their home, or people say who have health issues and they can't leave the house, or there's mobility issues. So hopefully down the road, if I do another launch, I'll try the hybrid approach if I can. That'll be a way into it.
Now, we must get some of your poems. First of all, time has gone. Can you believe? When people are giving you good information, you could just sit down and just listen and learn, because we're here is a learning platform as well as a celebratory one. So do you have a poem that you could share with us?
I will. Well, I'll read a poem that you mentioned at the start, Bottle Band Therapy. So I wrote this poem in response to lockdown, the first wave. The first wave of lockdown was actually quite a good one experience for me. The subsequent waves weren't there. So a lot of COVID poetry is very negative for understandable reasons. Well, I took a much more positive take on it. So this one is called Bottle Band Therapy. On the first year of ease from the lockdown, I bring a box full of bottles, green, brown, clear, and blue. They shine in the sun. Glass shards litter the ground. I pick my way carefully to the bank and select a bottle. The neck is smooth. I lob it down the hole, listen to the cacophony of the breaking, a joyous crashing sound. The way glass clings to glass makes the sound of rain. It is heaven to me as I let go and keep letting go and think, how will we gather our smashed cells into a new bowl?
Chinos. I think a lot of people can relate to that. Just crashing bottles and stuff. So did you do that a lot? Or is it just after COVID that you got it? Or did you?
Well, I did, because essentially the I suppose the story behind that poem was, when it was the height of the restriction, when you weren't allowed to go beyond 2 kilometres, the local park near Hermie is just at 2 kilometres. So I couldn't even go to my local park. So a huge, big mound of bottles built up. And then I kind of threw them all away and went, God, am I an alcoholic? How come I see my bottles? Now, they weren't just all alcohol bottles. They were like, you know, sauce jars and all the rest. But it was just like, I literally had a massive mound. And it was just like, and everybody was doing the same. It was just like, I remember the first day, it was like, I can actually drive to my local park. And it was like a liberation. And it was just like, when they went from 2K to 5K, that felt like, oh, it's like suddenly, it's just like freedom. It's like, I suppose, turning 18, you can do whatever you want. Nobody can tell you. You know, it's kind of like, it was that freedom of, you know, just that smidgen. It was just a small shift, but, you know, we're so used to things being so tight. You know, I even remember the day they reopened the hardware stores. It was just like, it was something to do. It was nearly like, yo, cool, queue up, go to a hardware store, buy shopping. So, you know.
We normally have a theme, and this month we're talking about mothers. In one minute, which has been unfair to you, what does the concept of mother mean to you, or the word mother mean to you? Just very quickly. You could even do a
can mean many things, actually, and there's quite a few mother poems in this collection. And for me, motherhood is about nurturing and caring, whether that comes from a man or a woman. But that's what mothering means, or motherhood means to me. So, you know, that kind of nurturing aspect, and, you know, bringing people along with you in a caring way.
And did you say you have, I don't think I've got time for it. Did you say you had a mothering poem there?
I do, I have a few of them. So I might read this one here. So this one is actually, I wrote this for my own mum. So she basically, last year she had a health scare. She was in a hospital a lot. But before that, she did come up to my house and she helped me replant my garden. And she lives down the countryside and she has a big, massive garden. And I helped her out over the years with the garden. And here, so the poem is simply called Gardening, for Mary Fitzgerald. My mum showed me how to move a juniper shrub across her garden. She dug the soil with a fork, pulled, pushed and shoved. The roots cracked under the effort. She explained how to take enough soil so the bush can survive as I plopped it into the wheelbarrow and wheeled the juniper across the verdant grass, wet with yesterday's rain. In my own place, my mum helped me to clear the back garden. The unkept heather looked forlorn. We poured salt in between the cracks of the tiles. Ants scurried about, crazy with anger as a colony was disturbed. She wrote out how to remove them and let bees do their work. On my own, I work out how to cut the stem of the ivy to kill it off, deadhead roses the right way, add mulch to the beds, weed the garden, sweep the backyard. In moments of confusion, I remember what she said. If they trouble you, make sure you dig down deep and clear them for more to grow.
Oh, wonderful. I'm sure she's so proud of you. What a wonderful thing. Listen, we've come to the end, but I wouldn't let you go unless you give us some... You've already... Your life journey of writing has given us lots of things we could hold on to and we could practice. But for those writers who just... Insecurity, I think, is one of the things that is to do with writing. Although something inside of you is bubbling up and say, this is what you want to do. What would you say to such writers, especially young writers?
I would say you learn by failure. Anybody who's ever successful, even if they're not a writer, a business person, you know, whatever, everybody gets there through failure. So you go along and you fail, you crack, you know, sports people, they do it all the time. So if you think of an analogy with sports people, most of the time they're actually failing in their careers. They don't get the score, they miss the goal, they miss the hoop, they miss the whatever. So most of the time in poetry or with any writing is you actually fail. You write the first draft, it's complete crap. It's all over the place. You don't know what you're talking about. That's fine. Yeah, that's what I call the power of editing. You come in, you edit, and you make it better. And then you learn by doing. And then you can go get help from people who come before you. So that's how I did. And it shortens the road a lot. So I offer creative writing classes to people who actually need help or want help. It's on a website called... www.writeasif.com. People can check it out and they can register for a free taste your workshop. And when you get help, that shortens the road a lot and you can learn the skill, the craft of writing. So when I was that angry teenager, I would just spew my poems out and think, one draft, I'm done, I've written the poem. It took me a while to realize, no, you actually have to craft the poem into something worthy. And that takes skill. It's like learning to drive a car. Some people, it comes to them easy. For me, it took me 5 times to actually pass my driving test. Eventually, I got there. But it's through failure you learn. And it gets better. It gets somewhat easier. I know now how to finish a poem a lot quicker time than before. Before, it used to take years. Now, it's a matter of months. But, you know, you can shorten the path. So I would say don't let your fear of failure cripple you. Some people, they can't make a distinction between what somebody's saying about your writing and what's about you. So if you confuse your writing with you, you can't or you won't take criticism. Just realize your writing is not you. And this is why you have to attend to the craft of the poetry, which is different to you. And top 3 tips would be read a lot, write a lot, and edit a lot. And if you do those 3 things, that'll help you and get help.
And thank you so much. I read a lot, write a lot, and edit a lot. That's a good 3 things.
Edit a lot and get help. You know, if you're stuck, get help.
Yes. So we can get help from you because you have, you're a teacher, you're a coach, you're a mentor.
Yes.
So if we follow those, if we go to your website, we are bound to. Now, for those who may not, would they be able to use grants, apply for grants to get help from you? If we couldn't afford the fees, would there be something we could apply for, a grant or something, to help
there
us?
There is. Yeah. So obviously I don't give the grants myself. The grants are provided by various, usually state-funded organizations. So you can apply to them. And there's various grants out there. So I suppose the first protocol to the would be the Arts Council. And they offer various grants. The 2 top ones would be the Literary Bursary and the Agility Award. And you can apply for them. And if you check up the Arts Council for a writer, you can see they come in various rounds. The Literary Bursary is highly competitive. You only give out about 10 to 15 per round, and they can get up to 200 applications. So you have probably a less than 1 in 10 chance of getting it. And it tends to go to very well established writers. The Agility Award is a little bit less. What to call it, I was going to say judgmental, but less, it's slightly easier to get in that less established writers can get it there, and they tend to give it the criteria isn't quite as high, but it's still quite competitive to get that. You don't can't get quite as much, you can only get about 5,000 for that. And then your local county council is a good place to go. So every county council is an arts office. And most county councils offer what's called an individual artist bursary. And it varies from county council. For example, Dublin City offers up to 5,000, Fingal 4,000, my own council, South Dublin offers 3,000, and a place like Mayo offers 1,000. So it does vary from place to place. And you can apply for that. And that's probably maybe a better place to start because there's a lot less competition. You might have only 10, 20 people applying. So the council is another great approach. So obviously, as I said, the Arts Council is a good place to go to first, but it can be quite competitive. The local county council is another good place to go to. There's less competition because they have a residency requirement. You usually have to be living in the county area to apply to that particular arts office. Some councils are a little bit more flexible on it. You might be able to argue your way around the residency restriction, especially if your work takes place in another county location. We might be able to, you know, get them to, you know, push aside or be flexible on that rule. It just depends. Some are very rigid and some are not. So it depends there. And then I was also, people don't know that there is actually supports out there for what we might call emerging writers. These are writers who haven't had a full book published yet. So they might be called emerging writers. They usually might have a couple of poems published here and there in different journals. So that would be classed as emerging. So Poetry Ireland does this thing called the Poetry Ireland Introductory Series, and you can apply for it. And if you get accepted into that program, you get to present poems at an international literary festival in Dublin. And that's a great platform, and it's a great opportunity if you get accepted, but it's highly competitive. I applied probably 4 or 5 times, and each time it was no. So what these things is that with any of these granting awards or competitions is after a certain point, you know, once you've met the objective criteria, it's kind of subjective as to what the people who are looking at it, what they want. So it's a bit like, I always compare, it's a bit like going for a job interview. You know, you might dress up really well, you might have a great CV, you might have loads of experience, you might have answered the questions really well, and you still don't get the job. And you're going like, what went on there? And it could be that they're looking for somebody who's a different experience, or somebody else answered the questions better, or, you know, they just don't feel you're a right fit or whatever. Like there could be hundreds of factors to determine why you didn't get the job and somebody else did. And usually the frustrating thing is you don't usually find out why. You can from the Arts Council, they can give you a little bit of feedback. They're on it, but more often than not, you know, it's just it kind of potluck in terms of what you might get. The one thing I would advise for people who, if they're putting something together in terms of your grant application, is how can you stand out and be a bit different to everybody else? And for example, there I got funding through Poetry Ireland to fund a workshop to do with tarot and poetry. So they had a theme for this year, which was called Written in the Stars. And I put together a workshop called Write Your Star. And I put the two together as an idea, and I pitched it to them. They accepted it. So that's an idea. I took something in there that I'm interested in, which is tarot, and then I took poetry and I blended the two together. So people might have a background, say, for example, that they mightn't think is worthwhile. So let's say you're into knitting or crocheting or that kind of stuff, and you might have a group of people who are into that kind of stuff, and they might be telling stories. So you might put together a workshop or a series of courses where you put storytelling and knitting and crocheting, and you could pitch that to an arts funding body, the local council, the arts office, some sort of body out there that funds local communities. And they might be interested in that, because that might be something different. So if you get a bit creative in how do you draw things together in a way that don't usually sit together, and if you can sort of put that across the line, you might be able to get funding for that. Because my take or my understanding or my sense is that the different arts bodies, they get loads of the applications from writers coming in saying, oh, I want to get this book published, or I want to get this done, and that's just 101. They get that all the time. They're looking for something that makes you stand out. So if you can stand out in a good way, maybe you might be lucky, you know, they might go with your idea, but then again they might not. So it just depends.
Well, thank you for letting us know that we need to be more creative, we need to stand out for that. Now, as we come towards the end, how would we get your book? Because you have haiku, you have so many things that we need to know in your book, your method of writing and things. How would we get hold of your books?
You can get hold of me directly. I have a whole stack of them here. So if people, I have actually two websites. One is called dwriter.com. That's where I put up my personal writing. The long-term plan is eventually to merge that into just the one website. So you can send a message. There's a possibility there to send me a message through that. So if you go to www.dwriter.com, you go into that, there is a link to where you can send a message. So you can ask to send the book, and, you know, we can do payment online there, and I can post it out to you there. So postage and packaging will be part of the price. Alternatively, I do have books in Books Upstairs, which is a great bookshop on Delir Street. So you can get the latest collection, The Singing Hollow, there. And I also have Thames Way. Copies of it are in Chapters, and there may be copies still in The Winding Stair, but I actually have to go and check, because they took copies a few years ago and I think they might have sold them out, but I'm not too sure. So there are the three places in Dublin where you can actually buy, or you can buy directly from me as well. So that would be the main thing. So if you go to my website, dwriter.com, you can send me a message, and then we can arrange a
and we wanted to have you as a mentor, as a coach.
If you want me as a coach, depending, like, it can be writing related or non-writing related. I'm a qualified coach, so I studied NLP, which is neuro-linguistic programming and life coaching. So you can go to a different website, which is called writeasif.com. So that's www.writeasif.com. I do taster workshops, and then I also do two packages, a group coaching package and a individual coaching package. And we can discuss those there. And this is pitched for all types of writing, not just poetry. It's novel writing, non-fiction writing, you know, whatever type of writing you're into, I can help you there. So I have clients, and you can look up that website, there's testimonials, and then you can look at the different packages. And I've basically learned this through experience. I've gone through loads of writing workshops over the years, so what I've done is distilled all that down into what's helpful and useful for you as a writer. And it's practical, because the workshops, you get the theory side, I give you examples, and then there's time for writing. And then depending on the package level, I can either give you individual support or I can give you group support, depending on what it is you want.
You've been a fabulous guest, absolutely fabulous. Thank you so much.
Hi, I'm still here at the Academic Plaza Hotel, International Dublin Writers Festival, and it's been a wonderful day. I have here Angelina, and she's going to be reading later on. We have a special dinner on, but without me saying much, let her talk to you about how she found today.
Hi, I'm Angelina. This is my third time attending the Writers Conference, and I find it very informative, very supportive, and I've really enjoyed it.
What has been the special take on today for you?
The confidence to write, and it has cleared my head. I came here not really knowing what direction I was going to take my writing, and now I have a much clearer picture of where I'm going with it and what I'm going to do with it.
Thank you. And that's because of all the guest speakers today, combination of the guest speakers and just networking?
Yes, both. Yeah. Mostly networking, but I will be doing an after dinner speech, so I'm looking forward to that.
Listen, Angela, thank you, Angelina. Thank you very much. We'll look forward to your speech later on. And also have here, all the way from America, thank you so much, Angelina. See you. All the way from America, we have a wonderful writer. And I must get a signed autograph, but I'm going to let her talk to you. Hi, how did you find today?
Hi. How did I find the conference? I really enjoyed it. It's a different group of writers, some in very different places in their career, some published, some not published, a very diverse group in terms of interests and subject matters, and that has been interesting. And, of course, the speakers have been interesting, and the social media and how to promote your book, very fascinating. Always can use some advice there. And so I've enjoyed it.
And what, I mean, because you've just written another book.
Right.
Which book have you got for us this evening?
Well, I just published the second book in a new series called The Clan Donald Saga. And it's going to be a series of historical fiction on the leaders of the MacDonald clan. And the one I just finished is about the friendship between King Robert Bruce and Angus Og MacDonald and the Battle of Bannockburn, which basically ensured the future of both of them in terms of power in the Isles of Scotland and King Robert Bruce's security on the throne. So it was fascinating. A lot of research involved, you can imagine.
And tell us, because we're not going to see you, you're going back to America soon, but where can we get that book from?
Well, Amazon UK has it, all the Amazons have it. That book is called Bound by Honor. The first book in the series is Summer Warrior, and that's a story of Summerled, the Norse Gael who forged the Kingdom of the Isles. So I'm on Amazon, and also my website is Regan, R-E-G-A-N, Walker.com. Oh, sorry, I gave you the wrong address. Regan Walker, author.com. you can get me there too.
Right, listen, we look forward to following you up, and thanks a lot for speaking to us today.
Thank you, I appreciate it.
Hi, it's Mary at International Writers Network, and we have come to the end of dinner, the speech, and of the International Dublin Writers Festival. It's been a wonderful day. The dinner was a clap, but the climax was the award that was won by a wonderful woman. I'm going to leave her to tell you how she's feeling right now to win the highest accolade of tonight. Hi, Tara.
Hello. Lovely to speak to you all.
Tell us your name and how does it feel right now?
So I'm Tara, I go by Tara Nivradan, and I'm really surprised. It is very unexpected, and I'm actually more of a playwright librettist, so I'm toying with the idea of writing a novel, and I feel this is sort of a sign from the universe, from above, that I have to get going with it. So yeah, and it's really exciting because it's, for every writer, it's a big headache. How do you finance, especially if you want to go indie, or if before you send it to an agent and you haven't got someone with whom you work, how do you finance the proofreading? How do you finance all these things? So yeah, that's really lovely to win that.
Well, congratulations again. And have you found today altogether?
It was absolutely lovely. I've made really lovely contacts with people who work in the same field and people who different things. People like you. You're meeting people like poets. And that's why a festival like this is so important, that you meet people from a different part of your industry. Because if you are a playwright, you only know theatre people. If you are a novelist, you tend to know only novelists. If you're a poet, you tend to know only poets. So it's really nice to all come together and exchange our art and see what unites us and how we can learn from each other.
You're just such an inspiration. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
This is 90.3.
This is Real FM.